You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Wednesday, June 20th. I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site, and on today's show, we're looking at the NBA draft and some of the recent news surrounding LeBron James' free agency. My guest is Chris Barnwell from CBSSports.com. We talk about the different options the Cavs have at number 8, LeBron's meetings-ish with the Cavs, and the idea that he doesn't know what he wants to do yet, and how that affects draft night. Thursday, of course, on June 21st, is the NBA draft. It starts at 7 p.m. We'll have a live instant reaction what the Cavs do at 7, as well as a full breakdown of the draft once that ends. So stay tuned for that on Thursday night / Friday morning in your feeds. Tomorrow we'll have our last player breakdown. We're going to, on Thursday's show, as a primer for the draft, I'm going to run through all of the latest rumors going on with the Cavs. So Thursday morning, everything we have right then in the lead up to and what I'm expecting that day, you'll have, as well as a breakdown of Michael Porter Jr., who I think has a very strong chance of going at number 8 if the Cavs do end up keeping the pick and he's still on the board. But here's today's show with myself and Chris Barnwell. If you aren't already, please go on iTunes, subscribe, leave a 5-star rating and review. It is the best way to support the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. Chris, let's start with this LeBron news. Now, Joe Vardon from Cleveland.com reported on June 19th, I believe the report came out, that the Cavs and LeBron James have been in contact. They've been talked in the phone and in person. There has been no meeting with James present. So James, LeBron has not been involved directly in these conversations. There has been no dialogue as far as LeBron's future is concerned because, according to the report, LeBron does not know what he wants to do yet. It looks like this is going to be also a process where the Cavs, basically, and the rest of the league are going to have to wait. But basically, there are multiple reports out there and indications that he is going to take his time to make his decision. It could be, he has until June 29th to exercise the player option, so that will tell us something. But then it's going to take us some time, probably into July, and to what he is going to do, and then that is obviously going to, I think, hold some other things in pattern. So when you, all of this news, the Cavs talking to him, this idea that, like, the free agency is going to be sort of delayed, even if it officially is open underway because of LeBron, what stands out to you amongst this information?
I find it really interesting that the Cavs, they're not going to let themselves kind of get paralyzed by LeBron fear. And while some people might disagree with the stance of let's just make the team better no matter what happens, I'm okay with it. I think it's good to just have a plan at all. Because the worst case scenario here is they just go, okay, well, we'll draft someone and then we'll try to figure out what to do based on how we feel about LeBron. Because then you don't know what you're doing and you're going into the offseason with like no actual plan of or coherent thought of this is the kind of team we want to build. Like, they've been connected to Kawhi Leonard. They've been connected to Kemba Walker a little bit. Even if LeBron leaves, but they somehow get a Kawhi Leonard rental and add Kemba Walker, that's a pretty solid team. That's probably a playoff team. You could do a lot worse than Kemba and Kawhi on the same team together. I'm sure they'd have to probably trade Kevin Love in at least one of those scenarios, but that they're at least getting talent there and trying to still win when really that might be their best option, just because when you have a roster like this, it's really hard to just tear it all back down with the contracts and everything that they just dished out. And maybe best case scenario, LeBron decides to come back and then you have a pretty good team around LeBron anyways. So while some people might prefer that they look more long-term because, you know, I think some people's opinions have swayed this week, but I think a lot of people felt that at the very end of the season, LeBron's probably going to go. So I think some people probably would prefer, you know, let's go towards more of the future. Let's draft the best young prospect available. Let's just clear out cap space. And if LeBron does decide to come back, well, we can work with that. And anyways.
So the idea that they could what they're going to trade theoretically to get Kawhi, I think, is a lot harder to pull off. I think the Kemba thing to me is there's a lot of not there's smoke there necessarily quite there's not a quite
that's a rumor that's been well not really a rumor that's been like substantiated by reporting, but that's been kind of one of those things where like you ever hear an idea and it's just like, yeah, that's obvious, why hasn't that happened yet? Kemba Walker to the Cavs has felt like one of those really obvious ESPN trade machine trades that's been going on since Kyrie left.
So you and I have been like g-chatting about this for months. Like, not that this is like
well, no, you've been sending me like, hey, okay, Kemba for this.
Yeah, I send you like 7 g-chats like, hey, Kemba on the Cavs, and you just go, no, please, like, save Kemba from like a non-LeBron Cavs. But like, if you look at the what Charlotte seems to be wanting to do, and you connect the dots of like what they're rumored to be interested in, they're like, it just it right, like, especially right now it makes sense. And for the Cavs, Kemba sort of would serve two masters, right? He's very, very good. He's a all-star caliber point guard. He gives you shot creation, which they dearly need. You maybe don't have to give up George Hill, so you keep your other good guard, which minimizes the it hurts to have Jordan Clarkson, and maybe you could dish him out in some way, but you know, like, hey, you can live with that. You get Kemba. He's good next year with or without LeBron. Maybe it's him and in Love, and you just try to be the 8 seed for 1 year. But if, you know, if you tear it down, it's not like he's tied to a Mike Conley-sized contract. This is a guy that would be a free agent next summer. So it's like, if you want to wipe your hands clean of it, go ahead and do it, if that's the case with Kemba.
Or if it's a disaster, you could just flip him at the trade deadline for a team that wants to win because he's that good.
Right, like, you could just flip him and get something in firm return. That's, like, the strength of his position. Love's contract to some degree. I think Hill's contract falls into that caliber as well, though the money is a little bit tighter on those other ones. But that, to me, makes a lot of sense. You look at, though, the part of this that is interesting to me is that and I've had this conversation with, I was talking this with my dad and, like, some friends that were like, they're annoyed, basically, that, and as fans, I think they have a right to do this, but I think there's, like, some frustration that LeBron is not telling them what he wants to. It would make the Cavs' life easier. There's no question that, like, if he tells them on June 20th that he's like, hey, I'm walking, like, there's nothing you can do, I'm going. And, like, I think there is this feeling, like, The Kawhi Leonard trade thing and like the Lakers' interest to me was like the Vatican putting up the white smoke that like, hey, like, maybe there's like a super team coming to LA. Like, that was like the vibe on around that day. If you wanted to deep dive into the tea leaves, like, you're Trelawney, but like, LeBron does not owe the Cavs to tell him, and I think the Cavs.
I don't think he knows.
That's the thing. I don't think he knows, and I don't think even if he did. To some degree, like, he shouldn't have to rush this decision. He should be able to figure this out, and this is complicated. It's possibly the last place he'll play in his career. He does not, like, owe the Cavs to decide by Thursday. He should take his time. If this stretches out to July, that's fine. Like, you know, I think basketball Twitter is going to get frustrated by this. I think in a summer where there's not a lot of other money, and a lot of the moves really are seem centered around what he's going to do to some degree, depending on what, you know, Paul George, Kawhi, all this stuff. Like, this could just be like a slow burn to whatever he decides to do. But he also, I think it complicates the Cavs process for Thursday to some degree, depending on what they decide to do. But and what Dan Gilbert's team has been throwing out there the last year, what this organization's thrown out there the last year in terms of like what they prioritize in the Kyrie trade, for example, getting that pick was their top priority versus, you know, maybe win now talent. He does not owe them that to tell them, hey, Thursday, this is what I want to do. I think that it makes it complicated, but it makes it more interesting to some degree too.
I think we're kind of beyond the whole this player owes the team this kind of thing. I feel like that's not something that really happens anymore. I think it's certainly a thing that fans, of course, they want the player to do what's right on the team, but that just doesn't happen, especially in LeBron's case. He doesn't owe the Cavs anything, and most players don't owe any team anything, but he's a very special case of not owing anyone anything. He's the most empowered athlete ever. He will always do what he wants to do. And you're right about how this has a very interesting impact on their summer. But again, I go back to, I don't really know if he knows what he's going to do. And when we look at LeBron, how he has just taken not just all his decisions he's made in the past, but really how he handles everything. He's a thinker. He ponders things. He really thinks about them. He doesn't just make impulse decisions. If he made impulse decisions, he might have left Cleveland or announced he was leaving Cleveland the day after they lost the finals, just out of frustration. Like, he's not going to be someone that just makes a decision on a whim. Now, I don't think that means he's going to make his free agency decision in late July. If he does, he'll probably have thought about it that entire time. But I don't think he's basing his decision based on what other teams do. I think he just really doesn't know. And the Cavs just kind of have to accept that. Hey, we might lose this guy. We might keep this guy. Oh, well. Which, that's frustrating. But on the other hand, other teams are going through this too. The Thunder have to deal with it with Paul George. The Spurs have to deal with it in some ways with Kawhi Leonard. Just when you have a star player and there's a chance of you losing them, you kind of just have to deal with it. And good organizations deal with it.
Yeah. And you do have just kind of turned the page in as much as it will be talked about for years. And, you know, people have thrown out like what it would mean for the franchise and a variety of different ways. I think that, you know, it's tricky. But looking at this pick, Chris, the Cavs, I think, have a tough job on Thursday. They have to basically try to serve a couple different masters, keep a couple different timelines open. You know, they can make the pick and then, you know, trade it later. A la Wiggins, they could take a player that just is their best long-term fit, regardless of what LeBron's going to do. Just kind of assuming maybe LeBron's going to walk, and then you have the option of kind of playing the middle ground of getting a guy that's going to help you in another situation, and it sort of does depend on what comes ahead of them, right? Like, if Michael Porter's there at 8, it wouldn't shock me if they roll the dice on him because the upside is there. It wouldn't shock me if, you know, Trae Young is a pick because they believe there's the potential for him to be something special as well. But let's start with, because we talked about Kemba a little bit and talked about Kawhi, let's talk about trading the pick. I don't know how much value that pick exactly has. I think it would take a team loving someone that is there at number 8 for it to be a thing. You know, maybe, you know, it gets them. To me, to just think about it like a plausible idea. Kemba on an expiring for whatever prospect Charlotte would want there, to me, makes some sense. You have to make the money work. But I think there's something there to me that makes that vibes really well there. And that type of deal where it's short-term money, where it's sort of not having to give up something in comparison to it, just seems more workable than like trying to hammer out a deal from a column that's in around the 8th pick, for example.
I think the issue with Charlotte's an example, but I think the issue with Charlotte's case is they're probably not going to pair with a Kemba Walker type player, even for a draft pick, if you don't take on like Nicholas Batum or Marvin Williams contract at the same time.
If I'm the Cavs at this point, I've come around on the idea that like I would probably just take on Batum. I've come around on that because, like, if
he's a good player.
He's a good player. If he's healthy, he makes a lot of sense around LeBron. Like, the money is, like, not great. And, like, what you'd send back to me might be, like, where the deal falls apart. Because I'm the Cavs. Like, if I'm getting Kemba, I am, like, saying, please take Jordan Clarkson off of my hands. And maybe, like, something has to be a sweetener there. And, like, then it gets complicated. But, like, if I'm the Cavs, like, I think taking on Batum's money and then, like, getting Kemba and then sending whatever back with that pick, to me, would make a lot of sense. I've come around on the idea that Nick Batum could be, like, worth the money. It's not, like, a great thing to just take that on without knowing what LeBron's going to do. But, I mean, if he gets you Kemba and that helps your pitch and you say, hey, Nick Batum could be something really good for you as well, LeBron, maybe that's a good thing. Because, like, you could that move, let's say it's Kemba Batum for the pick and like whatever salary filler, there's like an argument there that you're like setting up the right roster to help LeBron win next season. Because he remember, one of the last things he said at his post game 4 presser was, I still want to be in championship mode.
Right. I mean, he's always going to say that partially because LeBron, he's the type of player where if LeBron picks you, like, he's not going to do this. If LeBron said, I'm going to go to Orlando because I really like Disney World, the Magic will be a contender next year because they would just get rid of everything possible to make it work, and they would do everything possible to make sure he put a contender around them. It's not that it's that simple. It's just that that's the effect having LeBron has on your team, despite the fact that, in my opinion, there is no team in the NBA right now in a worse situation than Orlando. That's just how confident I am in LeBron's ability to make a team into a contender and every GM's ability to go, okay, what can we do to put a winning team around LeBron? That said, you're right. If Cleveland can at least make themselves look appealing to him in a contender sense, maybe that appeals to him of, okay, they've put together a team that I believe can win. I get to stay in Cleveland where I have an influence here that nowhere I will have this kind of influence anywhere else. There's nowhere I'm going to have the kind of influence on a city, a team, or a franchise that I will have in Cleveland. And it's my hometown team. It's the team I first played for. It's the place I get to retire in. That's a storybook ending. I don't know how much LeBron cares about that. So maybe that works. So that is a scenario you can do with the pick. The other area that you can kind of trade with the pick is you could just go full-on youth and trade up. Or trade down if you want to get some assets. And like you said, you want to get rid of Jordan Clarkson. You want to figure out some cap room. Maybe they want to trade Clarkson and George Hill to then go make a run at something else. We've been kind of focusing on Kemba, but maybe they really like Mikal Bridges and they think – or Mikal Bridges. I'm sorry if I got his name wrong. Or maybe they like Kevin Knox. They can probably trade down to make an effort at one of those guys at 10 or 11 or maybe even 12 if they really think they're going to fall. Ditch a Jordan Clarkson or a George Hill type contract, and then they can still get a pretty good young prospect at the same time, which is kind of the classic trade down move, which I could see them doing that because I don't think they're afraid to get creative with this pick because it's in such a weird position and such a weird draft where no one seems to have a consensus on who's actually good and where the tiers stop and where the tiers kind of like there's if you're going to tier all the draft picks, there's really blurry lines between who's better than who and who where those tiers kind of end. A lot of guys seem to have Ayton, Bagley, Doncic, and Jaren Jackson like kind of their top four. But then you can talk to some people who would probably put Bamba and maybe even Michael Porter Jr. up there, which that's a little weird in my opinion on Porter Jr., but this is one of those weird drafts where Cleveland can get really creative with this pick.
Yeah, like, the pick in itself is like, I do not exactly know what kind of value it holds. And again, I do think it'll be a draft night thing. It's like if Bamba slides, if Porter Jr.'s there and some team loves him, if Trae Young's there and some team loves him, like Atlanta's been rumored to be interested in Trae Young. And they want to trade back up. Like,
Phoenix apparently wants to trade back into the top 10. They're a team. I don't know if they have anything that Cleveland would want, but that's a team.
Since they're not giving up Devin Booker, like, probably not. if they want to send Cleveland Devin Booker, the Cavs are 100% being like, yes, we'll take Devin Booker. we will do that. Thank you very much. And call it in. We'll give you Jordan Clarkson. He's sort of like Devin Booker in the sense that he dribbles.
sure.
Sure. It's interesting to see like what that could look like, and it's hard to come up with deals like without sort of knowing like there's a Woj thing from ESPN where he said the Cavs are sort of unwilling to take on big money and trade away young guys just to hope LeBron stays, and that sort of would complicate that as well because that, as we talked about with the Kemba situation. Like that could be like a where a deal falls apart. Like right, like if they don't want to take back Batum, Marvin Williams, MKG, or something like that, then like what do you just is there not enough meat on there? And like do you know if you don't want to give up, you know I don't know I can't exactly speak to how much they value Jetty and Zizic and whatnot, but like I don't think they don't like those guys. I do think they would like to keep them and to keep developing them. I think that's something they've tried to at least prioritize to some degree in the last year. So. You know, I think that in its own right is just sort of something to think about with these trades. Like, what are the Cavs actually willing to do to go all in on this? If you look at the trade deadline, they didn't take on, except for Clarkson, who's not even like a long-term egregious contract, they didn't take on any real long-term money. They're going to be in a good negotiating position with Hood this summer. Larry Nance is only making 2.3 next year and is contract extension eligible. I'd be kind of surprised if they didn't get him on a pretty fair price this summer. On an early negotiation, and we'll see what happens with Hill, but he's only got $1 million guaranteed on his deal after next season. So those aren't exactly super terrible contracts to have long term. It's not like they added another 4 years beyond and mucked up their cap space in that trade deadline reset. So look at keeping the pick. Let's first look at picking a guy that is just a pure best player available pick. I think There to me is something scary about that, because you put yourself in a position where you have to, basically it's only a success in two situations. One, it lands you something in a trade later on. So if you take Trae Young and then you kind of work out one of those deals where you can't deal him for a little bit, but you trade him anyway and you get whoever later on, fine. You look at the other angle, the guy just doesn't work out and LeBron walks and you're just sort of left having to rebuild with Jetty and Zizic, you're really only two guys. Is there anything appealing about if Michael Porter Jr. or Trae Young is there, one of those two guys, and it's not probably quite fair to put Trae Young in that category, but if one of those two guys pops up and they're there and the Cavs take Porter, let's say, or reach for Kevin Knox, is there a severe downside to you that would keep you from just drafting best player available and hoping it works?
I don't think there's anything wrong with ever taking best player available as long as you're not the 76ers drafting the center for the third year in a row.
don't take like Jahlil and be like, yeah, like get some positional diversity, like get some skill set diversity, get things that are not exactly the same and overlapping and it gets complicated. Like don't overthink
it. Right. Don't overthink it. Don't overthink it to the point where it's like, well, they were the best player available. Even though like we're gonna have a hard time developing these guys, or we're assuming we're gonna trade one of them later. That's, I'm never a fan of doing that. But in terms of just taking the best player available and seeing what happens, I don't think that's wrong. The year they took Andrew Wiggins, I don't think they knew LeBron. They didn't know LeBron was gonna come back. They just took Andrew Wiggins because he was the number one prospect in the draft that year. And it turns out they were able to flip him for Kevin Love and build a championship team. That's kind of weird stuff that can happen.
Right, and if you look back at the other aspects of this, they probably to some degree, they certainly, I think, overthought the Bennett thing. Looking back, it's like very clear that Oladipo, whether he would have been an all-star in Cleveland or not, that was like the guy that sort of was the safest, and they went crazy with the Anthony Bennett pick, and it just didn't work, and
That's a situation where they were so obsessed with taking a big, and there were draft boards where Anthony Bennett was the second best big on that board and behind Nerlens Noel, and the Noel injury was kind of scary at the time for a lot of teams. So I kind of understood it in the sense of, well, if you're going to take a big, and then just Bennett turned out to be the worst number one overall pick ever, which talk about luck on that part. And honestly, you could probably say that the second big taken in that draft, Cody Zeller, ended up being the best of those three so far for their careers. So, hey, how does that pan out?
No one knows. But
you're right in the sense that you overthought it. And if you just taken the best player available, hey, you would have ended up with Oladipo.
Right, like that would have just been preferable. Like that just would have been like super preferable because he actually would have been probably at least have a competent skill set. I think the concern would be if it's Porter Jr., let's say, because I think he's the biggest boomer bust here. If he's not good at what he's supposed to be good at and the back is an issue, I think they're in a lot of trouble. Like, I just think if that happens and you get nothing for him and he's just useless and maybe develops like Wiggins, where he's like very polarizing and just sort of ends up being this like very frustrating if talented guy. Maybe that's not the worst thing to have at 8, but it's also like, well, what does our rebuild look like if LeBron walks? And is that enough to give LeBron help next year? That to me is like with Porter in particular. That is, I think, this one of this, and that with a back injury is the causation of all this. That is the scary part of drafting a guy like that to me.
Right. But I feel that's a Michael Porter Jr. issue, not a best player available issue, because you could also say, well, Bridges might be the best player available in your mind, or Sexton is the best player available in your mind, or Carter Jr. It doesn't have – I feel like, sure, you might take the best player available in the traditional sense of maybe some people believe that Michael Porter Jr. is the best player available there. But in my opinion, I feel like you're – concerns, which are legitimate concerns in the case of Porter Jr., I feel like those are specific to Porter Jr. and not the best player available traditionally. Because if Porter Jr. ends up, if the Kings end up trading back with, I don't know, the Bulls or the Magic, and they take Porter Jr. ahead of you, then your next player available completely changes.
Yeah.
And then it might turn into a good situation.
Right. Availability. But is 8 a point in the draft, do you think, where like that, like just taking like the upside, is that like a fair point to start like looking at the upside and just saying like, okay, this guy like could be the best guy, even if he's not necessarily the best right now, is that like a point in the draft where you think it's maybe worth that roll of the dice? Is it still early enough in the draft where like maybe you kind of had to bridge those two worlds a little bit?
My opinion on the draft is probably like the worst opinion to have, to be honest, because I don't think there's ever a wrong spot to take anyone, just because I am a full-on believer in the draft being a crapshoot. And the fact that's probably a little offensive to teams who put thousands of hours and tons of money into trying to make the correct pick. But that's part of why I believe the draft is a crapshoot, because they put all this effort and time, as they should, into making the correct pick, and they do what they can. And that's what they should do, and they're the best in the world at doing it. They still get it wrong sometimes. So this whole thing with, well, did they make the correct pick at 8? That's dumb. If the Cavs win draft night and then it turns out the player flops and everyone goes, well, they sure messed up that pick. It's like, well, they won draft night, so apparently they didn't mess up the pick. If they fail draft night and take, I don't know, Michael Porter Jr., everyone goes, well, that's a terrible pick because Porter Jr. has injuries and thinks he's better than he is and blah, blah, blah. And then he bursts into his star. It's like, wow, you know, well, they sure made that pick well. It's like, but I thought they lost draft night. So I don't think where you pick matters in terms of how the player finishes. I think it just depends on luck and developing them correctly. And obviously it's this really fine line between judging GMs and teams between we want to hold them accountable for the picks they make. My favorite examples are the Hornets and the Magic for the last 3 years. Rich Cho probably lost his job in Charlotte because he didn't draft particularly great. And some of those were explainable picks. Some of them were not very explainable picks. He passed on Donovan Mitchell from Malik Monk last year, despite the fact that Mitchell was projected by many people to go to the Hornets, although Monk made an unexpected fall, and had probably ended up costing him his job because he lost on draft night a lot and the picks didn't pan out. But on the other hand, with the Magic, Rob Hennigan never lost on draft night. Mario Hezonja, Aaron Gordon, Victor Oladipo, they constantly praised him for every draft came around, the Magic won on draft night. They made the right pick. He's currently working as an assistant GM or whatever in Oklahoma City again because he failed so hard in Orlando. So what pick you make based on what you're traditionally supposed to take at 8, I don't think that matters. I think as long as Cleveland gets a guy that they've done research on, that they're happy with, that they believe can help them however they plan on using it, whether it's helping a team win now or whether it's to help them win in the future, I think they should just take what they believe is the best player, whoever that happens to be at 8, whether it's best player available or best player fit for the team.
Let's continue this on the last model here. It's the what I'm going to dub the Mikal Bridges model. The take the guy that is, I think, both would help you win right now, in theory at least, and should also could be part of your next really good team. It'd be sort of a
people fit are in modern big NBA. On this guy.
Yeah, like I ride the high for Mikal Bridges as like someone who like knows very little about college basketball, but everything I read about him, I'm just like, yes, like this sounds great to me. Looking at this idea though, like, do you think there's a downside to the, or like, does it make sense maybe to take a guy at 8 who you know can help you regardless of what LeBron's going to do? Or like, could that be overthinking it? Like, could just taking, like, could that like talk yourself into a guy who's you're maybe reaching for if the right guy, like, is there's downsides to all of these, but to me, like, that seems to be the problem with this is like, you could be like reaching for something just because you think it's a little bit safer.
I don't think reaching because you consider it safer is a terrible idea. But that's also the risk. And if you're going to reach, it better be a good reach. And I don't like reaching for the sake of, well, LeBron might stay if we reach. Like, I don't like the idea of, well, this player fits better with LeBron. I don't think they should draft that way because you don't know what LeBron's going to do. And you shouldn't – do not be the Heat and draft Shabazz Napier because LeBron tweeted about him. Do not draft – Colin Sexton because LeBron tweets that's his favorite player in the draft coming up.
Dan Gilbert also loves Colin Sexton, so apparently like they can't agree on something.
actually, I like Colin Sexton as a prospect, so that's fine. I was just using him as an example. I think the Cavs should just focus on taking a player who fits no matter what they want to do, no matter what plan they go on. So, like you said, kind of like the Bridges model, but maybe, again, this just falls back to best player available, but you don't want to lock yourself into a box. You don't want to take a player based on one plan in particular, because then you're only hurting yourself, and you're hurting the player's prospect chances. You want to take the player you think has the good chance to succeed based on whatever environment you're going to create for him. Some teams have more stable environments than others, and that's why it works for them. But in Cleveland's case, you can't take – what Cleveland should not do here is they shouldn't take, like, a project player. They shouldn't take a Giannis Antetokounmpo-type player who – that sounds crazy right now, but at the time, Giannis was a huge project that no one expected to turn into what he turned into. You don't want to take a player who is going to take time and needs a certain situation to work out, because as Cleveland, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if LeBron's going to stay and you're going to have time to develop that project player. You don't know if LeBron's going to leave and you're going to have plenty of time to give him minutes. Just draft a player that you think is going to fit multiple situations. It can be flexible.
That is where I tend to come down to. Like, I think in my personal board for the guys at 8, I think like Wendell Carter makes sense. I think Mikal Bridges makes sense. I'm open to Trae Young more than I was a month ago. Michael Porter scares the bejesus out of me.
But again, that's for Porter reasons, not for
right
Cavs right. reasons.
Like, if you could guarantee me that he was going to be healthy, like, I'd probably be a lot more down with him as a pick as well. So, like, it's worth noting that as well. This is going to be so complicated. This draft is just going to be, I think, a lot of insanity. Chris, wrap it up on this. What is, like, a non-Cavs thing in this draft that, like, you are just looking forward to seeing Thursday? I have absolutely, besides, like, it seems like Aiden's a lock at number one, but it seems like after that, we're going to get some chaos. That is the only read I have on what the little nuggets we've seen right now.
I'm really looking forward to seeing where Bamba ends up and where Doncic ends up, because Doncic was a guy who a lot of people, they consider him the best player in the draft. And there's good reason to believe that. He's over in Europe at 19 years old, winning EuroLeague MVP against other pros and dominating them, like just killing them. He looks incredible over in Europe. I understand the apprehension with him in some ways, and I think that's fair, but I really want to see, do teams care about that, or do they want the more boom and bust type players, someone like Abamba, who is moving up thanks to his workouts, but beforehand had a lot of questions about him entering the draft. So I'm really curious to see where teams kind of fall on this, because I don't know how true this is. We saw a report the other day that the good teams, they like Doncic, but the bad teams don't. And I think that has to do with the whole boomer bust mentality of the draft, which is Doncic has probably the highest floor, but his chances of becoming that superstar, one-hit wonder, grand slam player, whatever the heck you want to call it, that feels kind of low. Not because of his ability as a player, just because a lot of people think it's more likely he's just going to be a solid player than a superstar. That just kind of seems to be the way it's going right now. Maybe he ends up being a superstar and we all look stupid for that, but that's just, it's draft day analysis. Draft day analysis is the worst kind of analysis you can find. So yeah. That's kind of where I'm falling on that one. So that's really where I really want to see is where those two players end up. And then, of course, there's the draft night trades, which I feel like we're going to get a handful this year.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a lot. Here's my, this is going to be very NBA media of me. I'm, like, super, like, fascinated by how the draft viewing experience is going to be without the ability for Woj. And per Tim Bontemps, no Yahoo and other outlets have agreed to not break draft picks ahead of time as well. I think you're still going to see local guys doing it. But I'm sort of kind of excited to some degree to just, like, watch and, like, watch the chaos unfold. Like, see it on television or if I'm, depending on where I'm at, and then have it, like, break down in front of me in real time instead of, like, the lead up until, like, we already know what's coming. Like, I'm sort of intrigued by how that's going to be, and I'm kind of excited by that. That's, like, a very, like, insider thing of me. The other aspect of it is I just like, think teams are overthinking Doncic to, like, an insane degree. If I was the Suns, I don't know why you don't take him one at this point. Like, I just don't get it.
It's because the... I got...
It's the Sarver... There's, like, a Sarver, like, Phoenix thing... and University of Arizona thing, and like I get that.
I don't even think it's that. I really do think it just comes down to the fact that while we think Doncic is going to be really good, I understand the logic of I would rather go for when I'm a bad team like the Suns, I'd rather try and swing for a franchise cornerstone player rather than taking the for sure probably going to be a pretty good player. Because a lot of people believe that Ayton, if both these players play to their maximum potential that we kind of believe they have right now, Ayton would probably end up being the better player. So I understand the logic there. I don't know if I agree with it, but at least I get it.
Yeah, I just kind of want to say, I kind of hope he doesn't go to Sacramento, but I hope he does end up in Atlanta.
Doncic?
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping he ends up in Atlanta. That's kind of like, I think him in like this like rebuilding team with a new coach who's like very well renowned for his player development, with John Collins, with like if they trade back up and get somebody else or whatever, like I'm down for him in Atlanta. That to me, I'm just like, that out of the teams at the top, I think that if he's not going to Phoenix, I'm super in love with him in Atlanta.
I can see that.
I mean, if he slips to 8, like let's just call it
in. He's not slipping to 8. I think that's
5 is his 5 is his seems like his floor. Like if I'd be shocked if like he's at 5 and Dallas doesn't just like nab it.
Dallas doesn't take him immediately and goes, "All right, Dennis Smith Jr., Doncic front court for the rest of our lives."
Which I would watch the Mavs like 80% more than I did this year, I think.
They were sad.
It was just
the watch.
Yeah, it was not great.
Basically what the Mavericks this year was, is Dirk doing something? Nope. All right, let's just go around with our
night. Yeah, game. Like the thing I most remember about this past Mavs season was like the Nerlens Noel hot dog thing, where like went in the media room and like ate a hot dog and like walked out.
Remember when everyone got really mad because Brian Colangelo got like no return for Nerlens Noel?
Oh, Brian Colangelo.
Don't have Verna Twitter accounts, folks.
Yeah, don't.
If you do, don't sass people on them.
Yeah, don't do that. Chris, thank you so much for coming on. Just give everyone a reminder of where they can find you on Twitter and all of that.
You can find me at CBS Sports, and if you would like to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at Chris Barnwell, CHRISBARNEWALL.
Thanks again to Chris for coming on today's show. Be sure to, again, find him on Twitter at Chris Barnwell. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrights. The podcast is on Twitter at Locked On Cavs and on Facebook at Locked On Cavs as well. Be sure to go on iTunes, leave a 5-star rating and review, and support the podcast. That is the best way to support the entire show. Without you and without those reviews, this podcast is nothing. So thank you to everyone who's already done that. If you want mailbag questions, submit them to lockedoncavs@gmail.com as we do a mailbag ahead of free agency next week. So if you want your question answered, now is the time to submit that question. Again, back tomorrow with one last pre-draft show and a breakdown of Michael Porter Jr. Thank you for listening. This has been Locked On Cavaliers for Wednesday, June 20th. I'm Chris Manning, your host. Thanks again, and cheers to y'all.